touch that dial. Here's what's on my mind tonight.
A professor running from his past. A young student running from his future. And a terrifying vision of their darkest fear.
So, General, our paths cross again.
Have their nightmares come alive?
Die like a man!
Or have they had just one drink too many?
Like a bottle alone can tear you apart.
Find out on the next Freddy's Nightmares.
Welcome, everyone!
Hello!
To the Freddy's Nightmares podcast, also known as Welcome to Prime Time.
That it is.
I'm your host, Enrique Couto, here with my good buddy, Double D, Louis DeNoyer.
How you doing, Hen?
Oh, I am mexcellent.
You're mexcellent.
That's part excellent, part Mexican, which is the best of both worlds.
Okay, fair enough.
How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Are you sure about that, though?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I'm still alive, I think.
I hope not.
I got a pulse. We're good. You're going to have to fire that hitman.
All problems aside, wait, could you say I'm alive?
I'm alive.
Fair enough. But we're here to talk to you guys today about Season 2, Episode 5, Memory Overload.
Memory Overload indeed. And this was one of those episodes that once it finished, I was like, this is the epitome of why this show is so great.
Oh, I'd agree. Yeah. And we're going to be getting into that. But first, I want to point out that if you love what we do here and you want to support it, we do have a Patreon, which you can find at freddysnightmares.com and click on the Patreon link.
Yes.
And believe it or not, assuming that it actually works, which Patreon says it is,
yeah,
there is soon going to be an option to do a 7-day free trial.
That'll be cool.
That means you'll be able to see what's available at the $3 tier, yeah, and get your access to video versions of the podcast.
That's really cool.
So make sure to check that out. Any help is hugely appreciated. But that all being said, Louis.
Yes, sir.
Your hat is not on brand.
I'm aware of that, and neither is my shirt.
Oh, God. Louis's wearing a Killer Clowns from outer space hat.
Yes.
Because I didn't realize this was the Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the series podcast.
Both of my nightmare hats were dirty, and I didn't have time to wash them before the show today, all right?
I don't believe that you wash anything.
I wash those hats pretty regularly because cigar smell gets in them pretty
heinously. Oh, my God. You're such a baby. The goal of owning anything is to get it to smell like cigars. Not to get it to not smell like cigars. It's called, what do we call that? It's, that's seasoning.
Seasoning,
you're
yes.
You're seasoning yes. your hat.
Seasoning my hat,
seasoning
my
your
clothes.
Hawaiian shirts. Seasoning your pets. So, but anyway, I feel like you're bringing a weird energy to the show today.
You think so?
Because I feel like all you really care about is going to see the new Fast and the Furious movie when we're done.
I am excited for that. I mean, he drives down a dam. Come on now.
Was it a regular dam or a goddamn?
Oh, it's a goddamn.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I do hope that they talk about family.
It is going to be one of three to close out the series as well.
Yes.
So we're looking at probably 7 hours of the final of the Fast and the Furious, which I think we've been teased about I don't know how long now.
That it's going to end?
Yes.
Yeah, but the problem isn't that they're lying. The problem is that people are like, well, we're going to watch the hell out of those.
That's fair.
Therefore, yeah. So anyway, but that's really all I had to go into today,
right.
I think. But before we start the show, I also want to say, if you're listening to this and you enjoy it, but you don't have any money to contribute or you're not really interested in watching us on a video podcast, the best thing you could do is leave us a star rating on your favorite podcasting app, whether
Absolutely.
It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We don't usually start the show slamming these down, but this week I felt like, why not?
Why not?
Because we're starting to get a decent amount of star ratings, and that helps new people find the show.
Yes.
So please consider dropping us a star rating, especially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That's where over 70% or 80% of podcast listeners find programs.
Yes.
So do that. We appreciate it. But now
we're heading back to Springwood, buddy.
And even if you have a Slaughter High shirt on, we're going to get through this somehow.
You are such a Slaughter High hater.
I don't like you.
I know. That's fair. I mean, that's fair. Who would?
I don't know.
So we are talking about season 2, episode 5, Memory Overload. The original air date was October 30th or November 5th of 1989. This episode is directed by Don Wiese. He had 136 directing credits on his resume. This was his second to last. He unfortunately passed away a couple years.
It was his second to last?
Second to last on his resume.
And I'm guessing, was that mostly a television career?
Television. Starting as early as 1951, we have Ride the High Iron in 56, The Thin Man TV series in 58. He did the Andy Griffith Show in 1960, Alfred Hitchcock Presents in 1962, Twilight Zone 1963, he was on Batman in 1966, Kolchak in 1975, and he also did the Munsters Revenge TV movie in 81.
Wow, okay, yeah. So this guy...
Journeyman.
Yeah, that's the word I was going to use. This is a journeyman director, just a seasoned veteran of television. You mentioned multiple anthology television series.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they brought him on kind of because of, you know, like, just kind of like to get that flavor, that old school flavor. But that's really wild.
No, it was really
and,
cool.
And it's important to remember that television, in fact, I was just watching, the second season, which wasn't as bad as people told me, but of Star Trek Picard.
I remember you were talking about that, yeah.
And I was fine. I'm starting a third season now, but, the thing that, you know, I noticed immediately watching it is how it looks like a movie.
Yeah.
And how most TV now really is just movies.
Yeah.
And there was a time when television was a very specific medium. You didn't get a lot of shots. You didn't get a lot of coverage. It was very, very specific. And now there's very little difference. And that's fine. That means the quality of the storytelling and the craft has gone up.
Absolutely.
But that all being said, they also only do 10 episodes a season or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few shows that have that heavy cinematic quality and do 22 episodes a season, like Freddy's Nightmares did, or like Star Trek did. It was very common to do 22 episode seasons because that'd be half a year of new episodes. So I just wanted to mention that this gentleman, what was Daniel Weiss?
Don Wiese.
Don Wiese. Yep. Don Wiese. That Don Wiese worked in a time when it was not uncommon, if you were a television director, to have 100 credits because you would come onto a series and do 6 episodes and that would be 6 out of the 40 that they would do that year.
And,
it's just a totally different world.
He had everything on there. I mean, I was selective in what I picked to relate it back to anthologies, like you said, but he had everything on there. So we also had writer was Michael Kirsenbaum. He did He-Man in 1984, the TV series, Dennis the Menace cartoon series in 86, something called Spiral Zone, which looked kind of like a Power Rangers knockoff, but he was the staff writer on Dream Come True, and he's going to return for 2 more episodes this season as a writer.
Ooh, teasing it, huh?
Oh,
look at you.
So, we are talking about Memory Overload, Season 2, Episode 5. We open with a shot of a college classroom as multiple men and women enter the classroom and sit down at the desk. Sitting amongst the others, we meet Barbara, who was Karen Landry. She was in MASH in 1981, St. Elsewhere in 1985. Disney's The Christmas Star in 86. She also was in Heartbreak Hotel and Star Trek Next Generation. And most recently, and by recently I mean 10 years ago, she was on Justified.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then we also meet Jeannie, who's played by Sharon Mahoney. She was on Murder, She Wrote in 92. Space Rangers in 93, was a regular stay on Days of Our Lives through the 90s, and also was in a series in 2003 called I, Detective. They are discussing their reason for taking the classes, notably Jeannie, who states she's taking English Lit to avoid science professors, adding she keeps falling in love with them, so English Lit will be safe as they do nothing for her.
Which makes sense, because traditionally it's the science professors that, in the words of the kids, pull tail.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank God those literature professors, nah, you don't have to worry about them.
So worried she might have offended her, Jeannie asked Barbara, what does she do? And Barbara tells her that she's the supervisor at a credit rating service, and she's only taking one course on Shakespeare. In front of them, an obviously inebriated gentleman sits down, taking out a flask and drinking before whispering to a woman who's seated in front of him that they should go back and make out.
You heard that? I couldn't hear anything.
He said go out, because that's what the caption
I heard something.
Yeah, the caption said go out, and then, that's what I imagined, because that's why he got slapped.
Well, and for the record, I mean, that's straight out of like silent era film. Yeah. Man leans over to woman, goes, hasha, bacha, 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 bacha. And then she goes, what? I never, and smacks him across the face. And that's exactly what happened.
Yes.
In this.
So the man receives a smack from the woman, and she states, it's none of your business, adding that she saw Othello with Bob and loved it because he asked her why she was taking this course. The gentleman then stands up, quoting a passage from Othello, stating, pray, Chuck, come hither and show me your eyes. He then grabs the woman by her head from behind, putting his hands into her eyeballs, holding her vigorously, and digs her eyeballs out, plucking them in a bloody mess.
And I like that as this man is tearing this woman's eyeballs out of her socket,
yes,
she is screaming.
Yes.
Blood is coming out all over his hands. Not a single person tried to help her in any way, which makes they only outnumbered him 20-1.
Yeah,
so
why
not?
They all crowd against the back of the wall, screaming in terror.
Which is what white people would do in that situation. Ah, he has the ability to harm us. Run! So
the class begins to freak out and scream even more as he holds them up as prizes before them. He begins to explain how the writings of Shakespeare weren't enough and that Shakespeare knew you had to grab the audience's attention, revealing the action to be a stunt, demonstrating his point as he thanks the victim, who is actually head of the theater department, for her participation.
The only thing this was missing was him holding up his hand up high and going, acting!
So he introduces himself as Professor Charles Wyndham, who is played by Andrew Pine. He was Agent Sears in the End of the World Freddy's Nightmares episode.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and as I stated on that episode, 184 acting credits, including To Hell and Back in 1955, Alfred Hitchcock Presents in 1962, Gunsmoke, Lancer, Kung Fu, Kolchak, Grizzly, Town the Dreaded Sundown. The list goes on and on for this guy. Jeannie comments that she thinks she's in love as Barbara, still shocked, sits and looks at what just took place. He introduces himself as the professor to the intro to Shakespeare before introducing the class to a cardboard cutout of Shakespeare that he refers to as Willie.
Yeah, well, I mean, nowadays in a public setting like that, you really can't talk about Willie.
You can't really, no.
No.
No, you can't. Wyndham offers his flask to Barbara, noticing her uneasiness, telling her it would make her feel good, but she declines. He then tells her that Springwood University is a very small school, so either she can learn from him or go on thinking that Jake and the Fat Man works on a number of levels.
Whoa!
Yeah, throwing shade.
Now, yeah, Freddy's Nightmares is gunning after Jake and the Fat Man. Let the syndication wars begin. David.
We next see Barbara and Jeannie walking the halls of the university as Jeannie goes on about how enamored she is by Wyndham. Barbara mocks her, stating that it works if she's into burned out drunks, but Jeannie fires back with, all artistic people drink a little, before Barbara tells her that Wyndham drank a quart right there in the class.
Is that why you drink all the time, David?
Am I artistic? I would think so.
Oh, artistic.
I hate you.
Okay.
Jeannie then gets the idea to ask Wyndham to tutor her and get a date by the second lesson. The conversation ends as they come across a hysterical Wyndham speaking to an unseen person about how important poetry is and how it must not be just taught, but nurtured. This does not impress either lady. We cut to Freddy's domain, where we see Freddy standing in the shadows holding a bottle of booze, stating, "So you don't think booze can kill you, huh?" He shatters the bottle on the wall, now holding the broken remains. "Why, the bottle alone can tear you apart. Booze ain't gonna kill the professor. He's just gonna wish it did."
Which, Freddy, who are you talking to that thinks booze won't kill you? Who was Freddy hanging out with?
I have no idea.
You think booze won't kill you? No, I think he knows it'll kill him. But
yes,
this is very exciting, David.
Why is that?
Because Freddy is going to show this educator that drinking is bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's an important life lesson.
It is.
I'm hoping next week he makes it so that a lawyer can't tell lies anymore. And then hilarity ensues, however, also.
Yes.
A valuable lesson.
A valuable lesson indeed.
Man, I hope that's next week.
So we come back to the professor, who's passed out on his couch, being woken to a knock outside his door. He stumbles over to the door with his hands on his head, clearly showing pain from a hangover, and opens the door to reveal a young man who identifies himself as Chuck, a former student of Wyndham's. Chuck, played by Kyle Chandler, who was in China Beach in 1989, Pure Country in 1992, that show Early Edition I talked about where that guy gets the newspaper before the events happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, ran four seasons, 96 to 2000.
They shot that at a hotel?
No.
The Four Seasons?
No, they did not shoot at the Four Seasons. It ran for four seasons.
And was he the lead?
He was the lead.
I never saw any of that.
He was also the producer on a couple episodes, I found out when I was writing the notes. He was also in King Kong in 05. He was on the TV series Friday Night Lights, Argo in 2012, and most famously, Wolf of Wall Street. He played the FBI agent.
Yeah, I remembered him from Argo, and Wolf of Wall Street was like what I immediately thought of when I saw him.
And I forgot, too, another one of our favorites. He's in Game Night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How could that possibly be profitable for Frito-Lay?
So Chuck is welcomed in by Wyndham after he admits he didn't recognize him, but does now. Chuck tells him that he needs the professor to help him as he's recently deserted the army and has been on the run for 2 days and needs the professor to help hide him. At first, Wyndham holds back, agreeing, stating it would make him an accessory to a crime, but soon is reminded of the strong military history in Chuck's family. Plus, Chuck tells him of all the awful nightmares he's having, being chased and eventually caught by military police. We see a quick dream cut as Chuck is running but falls to the ground. Picked up by the MPs, they are about to beat him as a general steps forward, who is played by Alex Cord. He was in The Naked City in 1962, Branded, the Larry Cohen series in 65.
Oh, okay.
Night Gallery in 71, In of the Damned in 75, which is an exploitation horror film, Murder, She Wrote, The Uninvited, Monsters, the TV show in 88. The general is telling the man not to hit Chuck in the face, but instead hit him in the stomach so no one will see the marks as Chuck screams.
That's the money.
Yeah.
Or you use a sack of Valencia oranges.
There is that too. We cut back to Wyndham and Chuck as he sits at the table finishing the dream tale. Wyndham tells them the dream is pretty clear that Chuck has guilt for his desertion. Chuck tells him it's more serious than the army, as it's his father that will be most upset with him and possibly want him dead. Wyndham agrees to let Chuck stay, telling him they'll see what they can do. When we then see the professor opening his desk drawer to remove a framed portrait of the general figure in Chuck's dream, as the professor exclaims, "So, General, our paths cross again, this time to do battle over the soul of your own son."
Ta-da!
Yeah.
I just want to point out, side note.
Yes.
It's so weird to me that people had to sign up for a class and everything. Like, I don't know. Like, if I want to learn things, I just go on the internet and find a drunk person to explain Shakespeare to me. I don't have to go and sit down in a specific place.
Yeah,
there's plenty of drunks on the internet ready to explain it.
I'm sure there's a Twitch history channel just waiting.
Well, there's Drunk History.
Oh, yeah, there's. I love Drunk History.
Of course you do.
Dude, that show's
hilarious. You would.
So we next see a hysterical Chuck sitting at a table while someone knocks on Wyndham's door. Chuck goes to the door to find the general waiting for him. Chuck tries to run past the general, stopping him and telling him that he doesn't need to be afraid because he thinks he is showing that he has the fight to avoid the service and being like him. That shows that he's got guts.
Ah, spunk.
Chuck thanks his father, and the father states that they should celebrate with a drink, which upsets Chuck as he begs his father not to drink. His father takes a shot, stating one drink never killed anyone. As he finishes, Chuck goes to make a break for it, but is caught and slapped by the general before he's thrown to the hands of the two MPs from before. Chuck struggles and begs, but the general tells him not to worry. He won't let them hang him because hanging is too good for him. Shoot him in the knees. The MPs remove their pistols, shooting Chuck in the knees, but we suddenly cut back to Chuck, recounting this to Wyndham, revealing it all to be another dream.
Which, I mean, who would have known?
Who would have thought?
Another dream.
Crazy. So, he reveals it to be another dream. Wyndham is analyzing it again, and Chuck tells him that since the dream takes place in Springwood in this apartment, he fears that they are closing in on him. The professor reassures him that it's probably not what it means at all, and Chuck looks him over, commenting that he's looking down, which causes Wyndham to thank him, stating that he's good. Which causes Wyndham to thank him, stating he's feeling good and drinking less.
That doesn't sound like. That doesn't sound accurate from what I've always heard.
Chuck says he's happy before Wyndham excuses himself to go work on papers, but Chuck follows him, knocking the papers from his hand, stating that he doesn't care about him. Wyndham tells him that he cares, opening up his drawer and handing a piece of paper over to Chuck, as Chuck realizes that it's one of his poems and is shocked to see that Wyndham kept it. Wyndham explains he kept it because it's really good and he thinks he should call the general and tell him how good it is and that'll make things okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean... Why wouldn't it, you know?
Call a military father and be like, listen, I know he deserted, but his poetry is spot on.
Hear me out. Flaming homosexual. Wait, I mean, because this is 89. Could that get him out? Nah, probably not.
Probably not.
Ah, well.
So Chuck tells him not a chance, laughing, and continues that his dad feels that all poetry is the same and should be written by a woman.
Which I thought was a very solid, like, Neanderthal attitude.
Yeah.
Poetry's written by women. Name 10 famous female poets. Sylvia Plath.
Wyndham tells him to trust him, and once they have word that they will move quickly before he returns back to his papers that he needs to do. Chuck excuses himself to do some writing, asking the professor if he's seen his notebook. Chuck suddenly comes to the realization that he and other students used to make fun of Wyndham for misplacing things, and he's personally never done it before himself. The professor asks him what, but Chuck states nothing before leaving him. He crosses a mirror and looks into it to see that his teeth are starting to decay a bit. The next morning, we see Wyndham enter his classroom, surprising the students, if not wooing some, to the bit of his newer, cleaner appearance.
Yeah, it's always nice, you know, when you notice very clearly that your teacher has cleaned up from being an out-and-out alky that no one could not see that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing they just have no boss.
Apparently not.
Because, like, the dude looks like alcohol smells.
And he drinks in the class and in the halls.
Well, it is a night class, so I guess that's okay. You know, hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Cha-cha-cha-cha. Anyway, this is not going to get you actual college credit.
So he asks them, what are they staring at? Ever seen someone who's had a really good weekend before? The class laughs before they begin diving back into a discussion of King Lear. He calls on Barbara to explain the difference in subplots with Lear and other works of Billy. Barbara questions his passing of this question like before and reminds him that he's the teacher, which makes the class laugh. She states he's never asked questions like that, and he tells her that that's about to change, and then states that it's the suit he's wearing that makes him an animal.
I mean, that checks out.
It does.
But have you ever seen a monkey in a suit?
Oh, I have.
It's
smoking
so
a cigar.
Good. Oh, my God. Why you tease me with such joys, such delicacy of existence?
Wyndham returns to his apartment that evening to find Chuck in the bathroom, who says he'll be out in a minute. Wyndham explains the news he's been waiting on, which is that he's going to head the English department of Bern University in Switzerland. Continuing that Chuck will be coming with him and a further chance to pursue poetry outside of the army's jurisdiction.
I like how at first he didn't want to house a criminal.
Yeah.
And now he's excited to transport an army deserter out of the country.
Yeah.
Which I feel like would be a bigger penalty, but I'm no doctor.
Maybe.
I just feel like it might be not be wise.
Highly illegal.
Well, I mean, yeah.
So, continuing that Chuck will be coming with him and a further chance to pursue poetry outside the army's jurisdiction, Chuck, who hasn't left the bathroom during this conversation till now, emerges from the bathroom holding a bottle of booze after Wyndham ends with the fact that he stopped drinking. Can you believe it? Chuck is visually run down and drunk.
Yeah, because he's taking his suggestion. He's like, you're right, I gotta take being a poet seriously. Glug, 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 glug.
We next see Chuck enter Wyndham's room as the professor states that they're almost packed. Soon, they'll take a flight to London, Shakespeare's home, and then on to their new lives in Bern. Chuck laughs, causing Wyndham to ask, what is it? And Chuck exclaims, they're not going to make it. The MPs are close, and if he wasn't drunk, he'd see that. Wyndham reminds him that he's not drinking anymore, but Chuck moves on to accusing him and won't be taking him along. Wyndham promises Chuck that he's coming before Chuck leaves the apartment, calling him a liar. We next see Chuck come back in on Wyndham as he says the taxi will be here soon and they're really going. Chuck suddenly leaves with his bags as Wyndham continues readying himself, but Chuck suddenly runs back into the apartment telling him that the general just pulled up.
Wait. The general?
The general.
For the best car insurance rates in town, no son of mine will be a deserter of the duty.
I was not prepared for that.
I have a long history of making David laugh.
You got me on
with
that one.
The general.
Oh,
I don't have the energy to do the general doing the speech from the end
Rambo,
of Rambo,
yes.
But that one's pretty good. I can't even get a job! Parking guy!
So, Wyndham questions if Chuck just thinks he saw the general, trying to confirm that he looks out the window and the cab is outside. Chuck tells Wyndham that he better not let the general get him. Wyndham tells him to hide in the bedroom and he'll let him know when it's clear. A knock goes onto the door as Wyndham calls that they'll be down in a minute, still thinking that it's the cab. He goes to the door as it continues opening the door, or as the knocking continues, opening the door as the general walks in stating, you are here. The general asks where his son is, and Wyndham tells him to leave him alone, but the general wastes no time grabbing him by the collar and hitting him, asking him to tell him where Chuck is. Folding like a chair at the hit, Wyndham shouts that he's in the bedroom as Chuck emerges, calling him a coward.
Well, I mean, you know, call a spade a spade.
One hit, and he's like, he's in the bedroom. I did like that.
No, that wasn't. He's in the bedroom.
So the general draws his gun, stating, look who's talking, as he fires a shot into Chuck, knocking him to the floor. The general calls to Chuck, calling him a coward, and stating that it's better he die like a man.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. That's just what he wants. Don't die like a man. Die like a girl. Like a dainty little girl. That'll show him.
Chuck, using the last of his breath, tells Wyndham they almost made it. It would have been nice, before he completely fades away before Wyndham's eyes.
But he literally fades away.
We literally fades away. Yeah.
Like he vanishes.
Yes. Wyndham, thinking he's gone mad, turns around as the general calls him Chuck. What's wrong with you? Get up like a man and face your father. Wyndham rises to his feet as the general continues, Professor Charles Wyndham, the great literary mind, they might be impressed with you up at the university, but you're still Chuck to me. Coward, deserter, he adds. Wyndham asks if he can forgive him now for how long it's been, but the general tells him that he deserted and it killed him. Wyndham argues that his desertion had nothing to do with the general's death. The general stands up asking, are you sure? Are you sure? He repeats it again, and we suddenly see that Wyndham, looking as he did in the beginning of the episode, waking up and being passed on the couch with his shoes still on, mind you.
Hell of a twist, though,
yeah.
Just to point out. So, in case you didn't understand because Dave mumbled or something.
Hey.
No, but basically, that was Wyndham's younger self.
Yes.
And he was bringing him in and then being forced to relive all of the trauma of letting down his own father,
yeah.
Which, of course, Freddie was thrilled at the opportunity to just prod some parental scarring and drama.
We'll get there.
I mean, just, but, you know, that's just Freddie's favorite.
Oh, yeah. He loves fucking with you.
Well, only when it's really inappropriate.
So, still with his shoes on the couch, his apartment back in the disarray from before, he gets up off the couch, revealing the whole thing to be a dream and pouring a shot of booze before a knock rattles at his door. He goes over to a desk, removing a photo of the general from before, but we now see it signed to Chuck, the family's next hero, Love Dad.
I gotta say, I like his dad's style.
Yeah.
That's what I do for gifts. I give people signed photos of myself. Yeah. Yeah. Just like, best of luck, Dave.
I have one of those. And, yes, I do.
Yeah. Anytime Dave has something signed by me, like a movie or whatever, or a poster, I always sign it like I don't know him.
Yep. Yes,
so
you do.
It's always like, best wishes.
Like, I think my favorite signature by far has nothing to do with you. It's when I got that ultimate cut of Halloween 2 at Cinema Wasteland, and you signed it, Halloween 2 sucks, fuck Dave.
Yeah, I'm great like that.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I'm a good dude.
So the knocking continues as Wyndham wipes tears from his eyes, getting to the door and stumbling. He takes another swig of his glass before opening. He finds Jeannie and Barbara behind the door and asks them what they're doing here. Barbara states that the office gave them his address to find him after hours, and Wyndham states that they want, asks what they want, as Barbara explains that Jeannie would like to be tutored by. Wyndham asks, is she her interpreter? And Barbara states Jeannie's nervous about asking before she pipes up that she could really use the professor's help. Wyndham begins to laugh, stating he doubts it and that he can barely help himself before shutting the door in their faces and apologizing. He stumbles away from the door, taking another swig before sitting down at a table and sobbing. Suddenly, more knocks rattle at the door, and Wyndham rushes to the door to find Chuck at his door begging for a place to stay again. We see the scene itself just like the A story, revealing that Wyndham is now in a cycle repeating the same dream over and over again.
It's beginning again. Talk about a hell.
Oh, we cut back to Freddy's domain, where we see him standing in front of a chalkboard with the phrase, I deserted from the army, written over and over again, like Bart Simpson.
Yeah.
Freddy states, Here I am, the head of the class. The professor is a dunce. His punishment? He has to relive that 10,000 times. Or until he dies. Whichever comes first. And then he laughs. And that is the end of the A story. Henrik, would you like to explain the continuation of the A and B story?
Oh, sure. Why not,
you
right?
You just need a tape recorder at this point.
I'm going to do that. In Freddy's Nightmares, there is an A story and a B story, but unlike a lot of television series and movies that have A stories and B stories, these A stories and B stories are split right down the middle. So you have the A story in the first 22 minutes and then the B story in the last 22 minutes. The reason for this is because they were syndicating, and what syndication means is you do not have a set time limit or a time slot anywhere. So some areas might only give you a half an hour. Some areas might give you an hour. So not wanting to leave money on the table, they decided to dip into the best of both worlds and have a 22-minute version of the episode and a 44-minute version of the episode.
Damn right.
So that is what's up. And the B story sometimes is well-related, but most times is almost completely unrelated. Usually you get like a glimpse at one of the characters who's going to be in the B story.
And
that is no different tonight because
no, it is not.
Now, first of all, everybody hold on to your butts because it's about to get wild.
Yeah.
As we join that woman we met at the beginning of the show, Barbara, at her very exciting job at the Credit Score Bureau.
That is correct. So,
so I didn't know FICO had headquarters in Springwood.
Did you see the name of the place?
No, what was it?
Computer Credit. Yeah, Computer Credit.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
So our B story begins as we're shown the exteriors of Springwood as a voiceover begins. This is the city of Springwood. It was 9:01 a.m. I was working the security beat at Computer Credit headquarters.
And he sounds almost exactly like the voice on Dragnet.
Yes.
Like, that's definitely what they're parodying, yeah.
Yeah. So we're shown the exterior of the headquarters, which is a large glass office building. The voiceover continues, I carry a 30-meg hard drive, full compartment of RAM. I know, I'm a computer.
Wow, 30 megs. Guys, are you hearing this? Oh, Mr. Moneybags over here. Bet he cuts his own hair.
Yeah. I was interfacing with a cute Mac next door when I got the call. It was a hot tip from one F. Kruger, always a reliable source. So in Springwood, Freddie has a phone, and he's reporting people to the credit bureaus.
Well, yeah, he has to have a hobby. He's just like, good luck getting a boat. It'll be a nightmare. What do you mean my credit's been declined? Sorry.
So the case involved one Millie Hansen and her supervisor, Barbara. One of them was dirty. The other was clean. My job to find out which is which. We see Millie, who is played by Eileen Seeley. She was in Family Ties in 1984, Star Trek Next Generation in 89,
yeah.
She-Wolf of London TV series in 91, The Baby Doll Murders in 1993. Did you recognize her, though?
I did not.
Okay, so she was in Batman Forever as Martha Wayne, which she has a bit role in that. But 1997, Jack Frost. She's the police officer's wife.
Oh, yeah, she totally is.
Yeah, it's totally her.
Great role, by the way. That means she's also Jack. Wait, she's the main cop's wife, right?
So she's in
part two as well.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, no, she's great.
No, this is awesome. So, and Barbara at their desk in the offices, as the gentleman approaches the front desk, Millie goes to get up, but Barbara tells her to leave customers to her as she wants Millie to work on the computer. Millie tries to tell Barbara that she should learn the programs too, but Barbara tells her that she doesn't have to as long as she's around. Barbara approaches the desk as a man tells her that he was late for one mortgage payment and now he can't get a credit card. Barbara then launches into a prepared speech about how they cannot do anything as a credit is a rating and their best bet is to not apply for credit cards for some time. There's nothing she can do.
Yeah, she just keeps saying that too.
Yeah.
That's like the big gag is it's just no matter who the faces are, nothing I can do, nothing I can do, nothing I can do, nothing I can do, nothing I can do.
So she ends on a woman who states their computer lost the payment record, which is causing her to lose her car. Barbara tells the woman to simply make the payments again and the system will flag it and refund her when it does. The woman states she can't afford six more payments and Barbara tells her there's nothing that she can do before walking away. Millie walks up to the woman and tells her that she can't promise anything but to write down the loan number and she will try to find the payment record in the computer. The woman happily writes the number down before Barbara requests the slip from Millie as she walks back to her desk. Barbara then tears the piece of paper up, stating that she runs the department, and she drops the paper into the trash.
Hey, kid, I'm a computer.
Stop on the downloading. We cut back to Freddy's domain as he's leaning over a desk with papers stating, you say you got credit problems, huh? Need some help? Just call me. I can kill the bill collectors, I can kill the lawyers, and if that doesn't work, I'll put you out of your misery.
And now I'm confused.
Yes.
So Freddy will kill the bill collectors and the lawyers.
Yes.
And if that doesn't work, he'll kill you.
He'll kill you.
I thought he was a bad guy.
Fair point.
No, like... what? Like, if you murder children,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as Freddie did,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, little children, innocent children.
Yes.
But then you also kill a bunch of lawyers and tax collectors.
Yes.
I feel like it's a wash.
I feel like it's a win.
Doesn't
on
that
some
count?
Side.
Like, can't they cancel each other out?
I would think so. In that case,
I feel like, I mean, I guess the real problem was they must have when they were like surrounding us, be like, Freddy Krueger, stay where you are. You've killed 16 children and only 15 tax collectors. So you are under arrest.
I want one of our ratings to be just an angry lawyer who thinks we just hate lawyers on this podcast, and that's his review.
Well, all I have to say is, go ahead, counselor, bring it.
Anyway. So we cut back to Barbara at her desk, filing her nails. The phone rings as her mother is calling in to ask Barbara to change her credit file so that she can buy a hat.
Ooh, well, I mean, I bet it was a really nice
Probably
hat.
Probably was a nice hat. Barbara tries to argue that she can't fix her line every time she overextends herself, but Barbara reluctantly agrees to do it again. Millie hears the whole exchange and makes her way over to the desk as the computer begins another voiceover stating, it didn't take long to figure out who was dirty. The question now, clean her up or run her in. Millie calls out Barbara on being wrong to change her mother's score but not help out other customers. Barbara states that she better change her attitude soon because while she appreciates her ethics, they can't be applied to the workplace. Millie walks away as the voiceover starts up again. She knew I was the only one who could catch her, so I played it on those fears. The computer fires up and in front of Barbara, catching her attention as it states, Barbara Part, you are under arrest for computer tampering, with text on the screen and a vocal saying that. Shocked, Barbara looks down to the cord that has wrapped her wrist like handcuffs. The computer starts reading the Miranda rights, and Barbara tells the computer that she'll get off with 2 years community service. It'll see. We then do a screen wipe to jail as we see and hear that Barbara has gotten 25 years in maximum security prison. We see the prison, which
Federal maximum pound me in the ass.
Prison, yes. How could I forget? We see the prison, which is almost like a sewer, and a beefy Millie is now the prison guard. Millie asks when is she going to catch on that computer tampering is a serious offense. Barbara argues that she was just doing it for her mom, and she is put into a cell by Millie. Millie tells her to worry more about survival now, especially with her new roommate, as Millie wheels around a computer that begins to light up with a yellow screen flashing and stating, so you're the new fish, huh? Quite a morsel, ain't ya? You want to live? You better be nice to me. The computer begins to laugh, as does Millie, and Barbara comes to at her desk with Millie asking her what's wrong, revealing it to be a dream.
That was scary. I was afraid that thing was going to make her lick her scuzzy drive. And you know, I ran out of jokes.
So Barbara tells her nothing is wrong, and Millie cautiously steps away. The computer comes back, freaking Barbara out, but keeping her composure in front of Millie. We then see the exterior of the credit building again as the computer starts. In my line of work, you expect the unexpected. Enter one Joe Boycott, love interest. The camera zooms into the building as we cut back to the credit office. We see Joe, who is played by Joseph Cowley. He was in Saturday Night Fever in 1977, the TV show Hunter in 85, the TV show Murphy's Law in 89, Alien Nation TV show in 90.
Oh, I love Alien Nation.
And The Commission 95. He's explaining to Barbara that he is wanting to apply for credit but has issue with a payment from a plumber that did shoddy work that he refused to pay for, which lost him his AAA credit rating.
Oh, poor baby.
Barbara
Didn't
informs
they know he
him,
was white?
Barbara informs him the computer won't consider changing the rating for at least 3 months. He recognizes a Romeo and Juliet medallion on her neck, calling attention to it. The two bond over Shakespeare and their love as Millie states that his plays are her only respite from the harsh realities of a too cruel world.
For the record, any woman who says respite,
yeah,
single too long. Like, I don't know if you can come back from that.
The computer chimes in with, he'll never buy that line. Joe tells her, it's so rare to find someone who shares my passion. The computer fires back with, he bought it. Joe asks her to have dinner with him, causing her to state that they just met. We see a twister wipe and find Joe and Barbara at a nice restaurant, locking lips as we hear the computer state, some people have all the fun. Me, I work.
I like that it doesn't just cut to them at the restaurant,
yeah,
but they're just making out. Like, they're not even sitting at the, they're like, usually people don't make out at fancy restaurants.
Yeah, usually.
That's the precursor. If you're lucky, if you paid the extra, you know how much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dan, yeah. How much does that cost again? I forget.
I do not have that number off the top of my head.
It's a Holliston joke.
As they finish their kiss, Barbara shakes her head yes, and they leave. We cut back to the credit office the next morning as Barbara tells Millie about their date, stating the sex was on a god level. Millie asks when they are going to go out again, adding that she should at least call him and tell him she had a good time last night or that she at least appreciated last night. Barbara states since she can't cook, she'll have to do something else for him. The computer states, like I always say, learn how to cook, stay out of jail.
Which, I mean...
it's good advice.
I guess so. I mean, I they're not really the same thought.
Nope, not really.
Like I always say, learn how to cook. Also, stay out of jail. Why not, right?
So she is next seen on the phone with Joe, telling him that she put nice things into his file to boost his rating back up to a triple A status.
I wonder what that means. Yeah. I put nice things in your file. It's just like, he smells really good.
From what she recants is that she put in that he always pays on time and that he had a bunch of extra loans that he actually didn't have that he also paid on time. So that's where the fraud comes in.
Okay, so, okay, you can just... just take my joke out back and shoot it like old Yeller.
You can continue with the joke.
No, because now it's dead.
It's not dead.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, call Herbert West.
Reanimator.
So she tells him that she put things in the file to make to change the file. And excuse me, I lost my place. There we go.
Typical Dave.
Barbara then is asked out to the restaurant and asked to lunch. She sits at the restaurant waiting for Joe, but he never shows. She returns to the credit department, convinced that she was asked out so that she would change the file.
And here's the real horror, David.
What?
Freddie's like, you want a nightmare? Dating in your 30s.
You're not wrong.
So he didn't call me back.
Yeah. So she tells Millie to go get the quarterly reports, excusing her from the office as she sits down at the computer, stating that Joe is about to have the worst credit rating since Germany lost World War II.
A bit dark.
Just
of
a
joke.
Just
but,
a bit.
But okay.
We then see Joe come to the office a short while later, surprising Barbara as he apologizes about lunch, stating that his mother got very sick, so he had to take her to the hospital before apologizing.
I was really hoping when she asked, like, is she okay? I was like, please say she's dead. Please say she's dead. Please say she's dead. But he didn't.
He commends her for being forgiving, and she states that she's not the vindictive type. Then realizes what she did and apologizes for what she's done and tells him that she can't undo anything as his credit is now locked in. She offers to make him dinner, but he states that he never wants to see her again before leaving the office.
For the record, I don't consider that a total faux pas. Mm-hmm. Like, when I ruined your credit...
You what?
Theoretically.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I made you a nice dinner.
Oh, okay.
Remember that time I made you ramen?
I do.
Yeah.
The ghost pepper ramen.
Oh, yeah, ghost pepper ramen. Good. Yeah. I think that makes up for you not being able to ever buy a home again. ever.
We're going to have a talk off air.
No.
She offers to make him dinner, but he states he never wants to see her again before leaving the office. Barbara sits back down at her desk as the computer starts asking her to help. She asks who it is and realizes that it's Joe. She asks how can she help, and the computer states, come get me. Barbara questions how when suddenly a fist punches through the screen, yanking her into the computer system. Inside the computer now, Barbara stands up, wiping pieces of shrapnel off her, but stumbling around heavily vented in a wired area as the computer states, kids, don't try this at home. She wanders the various corridors as an alarm sounds.
I love this inside the computer thing. Yeah. It reminds me of like VR Troopers.
Yes, 100%.
Just a room with lights and wires everywhere.
It felt very Are You Afraid of the Dark? Like, this is kind of like the set that they would have when they would do some of those digital episodes.
Actually, that show was shot on analog, David.
Jeez. Why? Why?
Because I hate you.
Okay. Inside the computer, Barbara wanders the corridors that are wired heavily as the computer states, kids, don't try this at home. We find an alarm going off and wires hanging randomly sparking. She finds two security guards who turn out to be the man and the woman, or the man who was late on his mortgage and the woman who had her car or had her file lost. They tell her credit update is going through currently, which is the reasoning for the alarm. She tells them her boyfriend is in danger and trapped in here, and they state that they're sorry, but there's nothing they can do about it, mocking her reply from the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, turnabout's fair, fuck you.
She asks, what's wrong with you people? As a hand holds her down and the woman begins to wrap, or as the man holds her down and a man and the woman begins to wrap a cord around her neck, stating that they're not people, they're numbers in a computer. Barbara asks her to stop as she's killing her, and the man states he'd like to help, but she's programmed that way and to wait 3 months. She hits the guard, setting her free, and runs to the corridors to find Joe behind a glass wall calling to her. She tells him she'll try to delete the glass casing and free him as she begins typing. She watches as Joe suddenly begins to disappear entirely, causing Barbara to freak out, asking, what's wrong? Millie appears telling her that she'd know if she kept up on the software updates. We then cut back to Barbara at the desk, reaching for a phone, but the image pauses as we hear the computer state, she was definitely losing her grip. All I could do was wait for her next move and hope it was the wrong one. I love this computer.
No, it's fun. I really like the Dragnet style computer. Yeah. It really elevates this a lot. And I love the idea that the second story gets so goofy in that way, because it just makes it fun.
Oh,
and you know, when you're watching this at like midnight, which is when you should be watching it,
absolutely,
it really clicks.
Yeah.
I found it this exceedingly charming.
Well, it lightens the mood from the A story.
Well, and now knowing now that that was this episode was directed by a guy who directed, you know, tons of great television and anthologies and stuff, it makes sense that I was noticing it was very referential.
Yeah, 100%. So we come back that evening to see Joe and Barbara are out to dinner again. She thanks him for meeting her as Joe tells her nothing has changed since she destroyed his credit rating. He asks why can this bad rating issues be deleted from the system, and Barbara tells him that any major changes cannot be made without using a personal code.
Ah, yes.
Joe tells her to use her personal code then. She tells him there's a chance she'll get caught and go to jail. Joe asks, is there another code that she can use? And Barbara states that she can use Millie's code. Joe states he doesn't want any harm to come to Millie, but he needs her to use Millie's code so that they can continue a future together.
Yeah, when he was saying that sentence, he was like, I don't want anything bad to happen to Millie. And I was like, where's the butt? Where's the butt? But I need to...
Yep. So we see Barbara the next day pacing the office awaiting Millie's arrival. She goes to the phone stating that she did change back Joe's credit using Millie's code, but it's 9:20 and Millie is not in yet. Being the only person in an office, she knows they'll know that it's her. Joe reassures her everything is probably fine and she's just late, which calms Barbara down. She hangs up, but another call rings as she races to the phone to hear Millie at the other end. Barbara asks her where she is, and she is informed that Millie has broken her leg and is at the ER. Panicked, Barbara asks her how does she know it's broken, annoying Millie at the other end. Barbara then asks her when is she coming in, and then is asking, well, why not? She scolds Millie, stating that people come into work all the time with broken legs, but doesn't get through to her as she hangs up, defeated and frustrated.
I mean, that's a fair point.
You know, I would
people
say so.
Come into work all the, remember that time you came into work with a broken leg?
I never have.
I thought you were a team player.
I'm not. I went to work with an ingrown toenail, and that really hurt.
Everything about you is bad.
So she hangs up the phone as the computer, we hear the computer fire up and state, as a computer, I can only do so much. It was time to call in the troops. A security man approaches Barbara, stating that he wants to speak to Millie as they have proof of file tampering. Barbara explains that Millie had to leave for a dentist appointment, but she'll be back. The man tells her not to tell Millie he was here and that when she returns to call him directly. The man leaves and the computer states, he left her alone. Dumb move. I had to stall her. Barbara states she's going to get the hell out of here as the computer fires up and states, better solution available, better solution available. She argues with the computer as it states that running away is dumb and she should come into the computer and delete the evidence. Barbara hesitates but then gives up and tells the computer to do it and do it fast. Back into the system she goes, landing hard again. Barbara sees out of the monitor that the security man has returned to the office now with a guard. The two guards appear telling her that she needs to take this disk and install it in Millie's file, erasing everything. She asks about the risk, and the man says, besides possible death, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah. Don't even sweat it, man. Yeah.
Barbara thinks then reluctantly goes down another corridor as we hear the computer state, I was waiting for the other shoe to fall. A shock knocks Barbara to the ground. Barbara didn't realize, but she was already a prisoner of her own warped mind. She then approaches a vented corridor as she opens it, revealing multiple disks. She pulls out Millie's drive and vaporizes it in a flash. The computer states, at this point, Barbara didn't know what was going on. I didn't either. To be honest, no one really knows what goes on inside computers. Need proof? Try getting one repaired. All I knew was, by the time the smoke cleared, it was all academic. We had her red-handed. We cut back to reality as we see Barbara struggling with the opening of the system as she suddenly knocks the whole system to the floor. The monitor mockingly flashes, I run the department, over and over again in all caps, driving Barbara to start shouting, I'll kill it, over and over again. Security returns and escorts the hysterical Barbara out the office now, and we next see Millie on the phone with Barbara's mom.
Now, I want to point out, I mean, let's be real.
Yeah.
I've had printers that made me act that way.
Oh, yeah.
That made me I'm just screaming my head off incoherently. No, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. So I totally get what she's going through.
I totally get it too.
I feel it.
Feel it.
Yeah.
So she is next seen on the phone with Barbara's mom. Barbara excuse me, 2 seconds.
How dare you?
I know. With Barbara's mom agreeing that 5 years in a federal prison is a stiff sentence and that the judge probably didn't like her.
Jesus.
She tells Barbara's mom that she has to go as she asks Millie to extend her credit, but Millie refuses, stating that she'll have to budget herself instead. We see Joe enter with flowers, stating that they're for Millie, and Millie asks what for, and he states her promotion to supervisor and congratulations, sis. He commends her on the plan to get rid of Barbara, showing excellent organizational skills. We hear beeping, and Joe asks what's that, and Millie responds that she programmed the computer to turn itself on randomly, which drove Barbara insane. The computer then states, "Good night, Millie. I love you." She tells it not so bad itself as the two leave. The computer starts up again, stating, "It was 10:22 p.m. The city was quiet. I still had time to find that cute little Mac and show her my hard drive."
Ooh, and I gotta say, did not see that twist coming.
I did not.
It's so rare that it's a vindictiveness from a human and not just Freddy.
Just not Freddy,
Yeah, so I was not prepared for that ending. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
So the episode ends as we cut back to Freddy, who states, "There's a lesson here, kiddies. When you hire someone, make sure they're as dumb as you are. Or in your case, punks, that probably means brain dead." He laughs and walks away, stating, "I crack myself up." And that is season 2, episode 5.
Indeed.
Memory overload.
And that is the exact mindset I went into looking for a co-host for the show.
I don't appreciate that, but okay.
What's wrong, buddy? You need some shiny?
Stop it.
Need some shiny, bud?
And I would like to point out, too, that the title, Memory Overload, relates to both stories, with the memory overload of the professor, with his going back to the memories of his father, and the memory overload of the computer tie-in.
You mean the random access memory of the computer?
Yeah, you know.
David didn't even have a computer until recently.
No, shut up.
You disgust me.
I've had a computer for a long time.
Okay. That's like, I've had a car for a long time. It's like, yeah, but it's on your front lawn on cinder blocks. That doesn't count.
I mean, it's fine. But that is, I had a lot of fun with that episode.
Yeah, no, this is a really fun one. I felt like it really, I don't know, it really, it hit me, it made me chuckle, it made me laugh, and it was a little creepy, the whole father, the whole reliving his fear of his father when he was a kid and stuff.
Yeah, when
that
I
really
watched
got
that,
to me.
When I watched that last week, before we recorded the episode, I was just like, my God, man, that is a dark ending. Like, it reminded me of the ending of the school one when Freddy completely just breaks that kid down to assume with society. Speak of the devil.
Oh, boy.
Here comes we go, Freddy.
Hey, bitch.
Hey, Freddy.
How you doing there?
I was doing fine until now.
What are you doing after the show?
I think we're going to go see Fast and the Furious, the new one.
Oh, I was hoping we could maybe get a drink or something. You seem like the kind of guy who likes to get a drink.
I mean, I do like drinks, but not with you.
Yeah, you look like you would like to drink.
No.
Tell me, when you're drunk, how much more drunk does the girl you're hanging out with need to be?
Freddie, that's uncalled for.
That's a little harsh.
No, it's true. It's all true. So I actually play a drinking game, you know, when I listen to your show.
Oh, okay. What's that?
Oh, you know, every time someone says something that sounds like a virgin, I drink. Good thing I can't die again.
He's got us there. Ow. Freddy, why?
Deal with it.
All right, fair.
Jeez.
Well, you know the old saying, right?
What's that?
One tequila, two tequila, three tequila, kill you in your dreams and you die for real.
I hadn't heard that one. That's a new one.
Anyway, I'm going to spoil the end to Fast and the Furious 10 before I leave.
Okay.
But not on the show, because I feel bad enough for your listeners already.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Freddy.
Yeah. Suck a dick up till you hiccup.
Bye, Freddy.
Yeah. Bye, Freddy. Thanks. Jeez. He's gotten a little harsh.
Did you smell the bourbon? I did.
The bourbon?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, because he's like... What's that? What's the mom's name? Where the hell do you keep the bourbon? From part 3.
Part 3, yep.
So what's your rating, David?
All right, this is getting I'm going to give this a B+. I really, really enjoyed this. What I would say is the only detour for me to not rate it a little higher is it didn't have a lot of... action in that first story, and it was really heartbreaking.
Yeah, and there isn't a ton of Freddy. This one was a very light on Freddy
very
episode.
Light on Freddy, yeah.
So you said you, what was that, a B+?
B+, yeah, B+.
I would probably go with more like a, like a B, actually.
A, B? Yeah.
A little bit lower, but I really did enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but it, yeah, it, I guess the lack of Freddy is what I'm going to call like a little bit of a drawback.
Yeah.
But overall, really fun.
Really fun.
Memorable. The whole Dragnet computer thing was super fun.
I just love the balance it had because, like, you had that very dour story to start, and then it's just like, hey, we're going into computers, and there's a detective. I'm like, I'm all in.
Yeah. So you had a B, I had a B+.
That is correct.
And, yeah, that is episode or season 2, episode 5.
That is correct again. And next week we are going to be heading back to Springwood with our good buddy Bill Malone for season 2, episode 6, Lucky Stiff, which if you want a preview synopsis, what happens when you and your lover kill your husband who ends up having a jackpot winning lottery ticket buried on him?
Oh man, that sounds like a Tales from the Crypt episode. That sounds great.
Yeah, no, it looks awesome.
Before we get out of here,
yes.
Believe it or not, we have an email.
Oh, okay.
Somebody wrote us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com, which is where you can reach out and cut someone anytime you like.
Very true.
This email is from Skunk Rocker. That's the name he gave.
Fair enough.
And I'm going to respect that.
All right, what we got?
I don't know if he thought I was going to read this or not, but out on the show, but I am.
Okay.
Subject line, love the show. Dear Enrique and David, and then in parentheses, this is as and Freddie. Hello, I just wanted to write in and say how much I love the show. I listen every week and was especially excited for today's episode, Photo Finish.
Yes.
This was my favorite episode of the show growing up, and I even had it recorded on VHS, a recording on VHS of the episode from when it aired directly after Saturday Night Live.
Oh, wow.
I was really glad to hear you guys like this episode, too. Rewatching the series with you guys, I realized that Ollie being played by Richard Spiked,
yeah, I think,
was interesting because he's actually not just a director on Supernatural, but he played one of the major side characters on the show as well in the form of the trickster Angel Gabriel.
Okay.
When I watched Supernatural, I didn't recognize him from Freddy's Nightmares, but as soon as he came on screen this past week, I was like, holy crap, I know that dude. I can't wait till you get to my second favorite episode, as it just so happens Richard is in that one too.
Ooh.
All right.
Okay.
I always love how you guys do the breakdowns of the episode, talking about who was in each episode and what they've done in the past, because a lot of people I didn't know I'd seen in other things.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And of course, the sidebar episodes featuring the crew have been fascinating, as well as the fun other Freddy and media breakdowns. I certainly hope when season 2 ends, the podcast continues in some form of fashion. Maybe you guys could cover the Freddy Krueger Tales of Terror young adult series of books.
Wish, yes.
Or possibly branch out from Freddy and cover other lesser known horror anthology series like the very similar to Freddy's Nightmares, Monsters.
Monsters, I knew it.
A show so similar in design that for years I thought episodes from that show were actually from Freddy.
Oh my God, I could see that. I could totally see that.
I want to finish this very long but passionate email by saying I'm glad to hear Chicano is doing better and give him lots of pets and treats. I will. He's actually sitting
right behind us.
Right now. Good boy.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. Oh, and they said, thank you guys so much for doing the show. Sincerely, Skunk.
That's awesome, Skunk. Thank you so much.
Thank you for writing in, Skunk. We really appreciate it, man. And we're happy to bring you a little laughter. You know, this show is just about as niche as you can get.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
We cover only Freddy's Nightmares, a show that is back to being not even publicly available.
That's the facts.
Yeah. So, no, we're glad you enjoy it. Without going into too much detail, the fact is not lost on us that we have maybe 20, 22 weeks left on this show before we're going to run out of content.
Yep.
Maybe a little more, maybe a little less. Yeah. We have some ideas up our sleeves for bonus episodes and things like that.
We do.
And we are going to cover some Freddy Krueger comics and stuff like that. But that's all up to David. David is lazy. He's supposed to book the guests. He's supposed to book all that. And yet somehow, where's Gil Adler, dude?
Oh, would you stop?
Anyway. It'll happen. It'll happen. I'm not worried about that. But that is not lost on us.
Yeah.
We are planning... we just haven't kind of finalized it. We are planning a show that we will do after this one wraps up to kind of continue the fun we've been doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it'll be very different because there'll be, at least most of the time, no Freddy. Although we could just have Freddy comment on things he had nothing to do with.
Podcast.
I mean, he lives just over there.
I know.
So the only problem is we can't show him because Warner Brothers will sue our dicks off.
That is very true.
So, but we will definitely keep you guys abreast to what we're going to do next. So do not worry. But for now, we still have 19 episodes of Freddy's Nightmares to cover, and cover them we will.
Damn right.
So, but thank you for the email. And if anybody wants to email us, it's freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. You got anything else, David?
I think I'm good to go,
well,
sir.
Then I guess it's time for us to get out of here. You have been listening to Welcome to Prime Time, a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. We just gave the email, so I'm not going to say that again. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you're subscribed to your favorite podcasting app. Leave us a rating. It helps us immensely.
Yes.
And also know that we love you.
We do.
Me like a father, David like that uncle.
That's fair.
And and we'll be back here next week to take you right back to Springwood. What? Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm excited already.
Oh, that's great. Great. But anyway, we'll talk to you all next time.
See
Until y'all. Then, be safe and go to sleep.